I'm going to ask Kate and David. Kate and David, welcome. Lovely to have you here up with me. And perhaps you can just briefly just introduce yourself, where you're from, what you used to do, what you're doing now, just so that folk can find out a little bit about you if they don't know you.
Hi, everyone. My name's Kate Orenstein. I work here at Christchurch Midrand. I used to be a travel agent, managed to travel all over the world, and I've been working here since 2002. I'm what they call the women's worker. I'm still trying to work out what that means, but I've been in a job for 14 years, so I must be doing something right.
Hi, everyone. My name is David. I'm originally from Rustenburg. After matric, I decided to give my life to doing gospel work. So I went to train at the college in Cape Town, and I came here in 2013, and I've been doing student ministry since then. So that's what I do here at the church.
Now, the reason I asked David and Kate to join me in front here, because they were both born in Rustenburg, and we don't hold that against them, but they're both born in Rustenburg, but because of our past, because of apartheid, they actually lived in two different worlds. They actually lived in two parallel universes, and that's our heritage, that's our background, that's our history. And I thought it would be good for them to tell a little bit just about their story, and how they came to understand apartheid, and how they came to understand people from a different race. Before we get to that, David, let me just start off straight away and ask you how you feel. Perhaps Kate can add in as well. How do you feel as a black man when you hear someone like Penny Sparrow say, I quote, "From now on, I will address the blacks of South Africa as monkeys"? How does that make you feel?
Well, I think it's quite difficult to describe the feeling, but I think furious that someone like that would say stuff like that in 2016, for someone to say that, I think it makes me angry that we've been dehumanized, by we meaning blacks. So I think that makes me furious. And on the other hand, just the feeling of that there is no justice, that there is injustice in our day and age, that someone would get away with saying something like that. I think that's my sort of feeling, a feeling of anger and just how can you say that kind of feeling.
Kate, how does that make you feel? You're a white person.
Yeah, I think, well, on the outside, we all know on the inside it's a bit different, up the bucks. I think it is so embarrassing when you hear people talk like that, and you can't believe it. It's so shocking. And with our past, especially someone my age, I'm younger than what I look, but where we've come from, and then to say something stupid like that is just, it's embarrassing to be a white person. And you actually can't believe it, that someone could say that. And it just is so embarrassing.
Yet there would be some or many white people who don't feel embarrassed, who may actually agree with that, which is
Absolutely.
Part of the tragedy of our country.
Absolutely. And that is, our country is so complicated, we all know that. And when people say things like that, it just adds to the complications and it exposes the heart, which is obviously what we will be talking about later on.
So it's interesting that you had all these racist statements by black people and white people. They've all apologized, but it actually shows what's on their hearts. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, Dave? And I think a lot more people would agree, I mean, would have the same sort of thought as Penny Sparrow, just not brave enough to say it. I think I would think that in a country like we live in, there's definitely a lot of people who feel that way, but are not brave enough to say it out.
Okay. David, help me here. Vilapi Khumalo, he responded to the racist statements. There were numerous racist statements on social media, in the press, and he said, "I want to cleanse this country of all white people. We must act as Hitler did to the Jews." Two questions. What do you think of that? And the second question, which is more important, is what caused him to say that?
I think, let me start with the second question to say, I think I would, I mean, not that I understand, but I get why an angry black man would say things like that. But I think when I heard it on 702, my heart sank that someone would say that about a people group who are created in God's image. So how can you say something like that? And I think it's the same with Penispero, that he's going to get away with saying something like that, that dehumanizes people who are created in God's image. So I think, yeah, I just don't understand why someone would say that.
Kate, why do you think someone would say that?
Well, I've spoken to lots of my white friends over the years, and all of us have agreed that if we were the ones who'd been wronged, you would have felt that you wanted to just wipe out those who did that to us.
Yep.
And the fact, we say it time and time again, the fact that we sit in this country and we are relatively at peace is an absolute miracle. Hmm. Because at times, I would think I would have wanted to wipe out all the whites because of the past, if we're going to be honest.
Yep.
So it's terrible.
Sure. David?
So I think, I mean, personally, whenever I go to the Apartheid Museum, walking through some of those videos, and I do get a sense of, like, somebody needs to punish somebody. And I guess I would understand that you want to retaliate because in the past and presently, your people have been oppressed. And I think that's the sense of, that's the feeling that I get when I walk through the Apartheid Museum, that shucks, we need to do something.
So there's a sense of anger, there's a sense of injustice, that injustice has been done, and that it seems as if nothing has really been done about that injustice.
Yeah.
Let's quickly just move on. And Kate, perhaps you can tell us your upbringing and just a little bit about what contact you had with black people. And then what was your first exposure to apartheid?
Okay, so I schooled during the worst years. I matriculated in 88. So I had the best of the education at that time. I never thought about black people. We had, obviously we had Louisa working for us. I didn't think where her children were or anything. It's embarrassing looking back. I moved to Joburg in 89, so things were starting to change. I lived at the YWCA, and that was the first time I met black people. It was never an issue for me. It was just, that was life. I never thought, wow, you're black, we now can be friends. But what did happen is I dated a colored guy for a short time in the sort of 1990s, and he was applied to live in a block of flats that I was living in with some other friends, Desiree is here also, and he was denied access to rent from this block of flats. And I was like, but there are flats available. Why can't he come and live here? And it was because he was colored. And that was the first time I had experienced it. And I cried, and I was so angry. And this friend of mine, he was like, what is wrong with you? This is normal. But for me, it wasn't normal. So that was the first experience. And then also, my mom bought me Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom just when it came out. And I read it and cried through most of it, because, you know, it said in 1986 XYZ was happening, and I thought, but I was 16 and I didn't know anything. How did I not know? So that was my experience.
So for about 20 years, living in your lovely white enclave, you had no idea that there was apartheid.
No, well, I knew there was apartheid, but it didn't register. So we had our school drills because of the Swat Gevaar. Under the chairs and under the tables.
We were coming for them.
and the power station got blown up at some point, but didn't affect us. There was still electricity, still went to school, played my hockey, did what? No, it didn't affect me. Louisa still came to work. Didn't affect me. It was, now looking back, you cannot believe it. As someone who's not, I'm not stupid. But I didn't know.
David, you were brought up in a village outside of Rustenburg. Can you tell us just a little bit about your contact with white people, and when did you find out about apartheid? When did you make any contact with people of another race?
So I think life in the village is very separated from the rest of reality. And I think I always grew up thinking that whites were superior, they were better than us, not just whites, but people of other ethnic groups. And I think that's how I grew up. I was raised by my great-grandmother who was a domestic worker. So she had positive things to say about white people because she worked for them. They treated her well. So I was oblivious to what was happening. Occasionally, I would watch Sarafina because it plays on the 16th of every year, and they would play it, and that's, I guess, my exposure to apartheid. White guys would come into to our village, do things. So I remember on one occasion, the chief of the village, which is like the, highest authority in the land, he was talking to this white older guy, and he called him Bas. And to me, that was like, wow, like that's what this guy who's in authority thinks of this guy. So that was my, introduction to this whole thing, that you are inferior. Even the standard of beauty is that if you're not black, you're more beautiful. I know there's a Tswana song that we sing at weddings that come out and see the bride. She's so beautiful, she looks like a colored. And so I think I've always grown up with a sense of being inferior, that the whites are good and everything they do is amazing, and you need to aspire to be white. I think my first interaction with people from the opposite ethnic group was when I came to Joburg at the Johannesburg Bible College, where I met other Christians. I was at one of our churches in Auckland Park, and it was very mixed, and that is my first sort of interaction with people from a different ethnic group.
So how old were you?
I was about 19.
So the first 19, 20 years of your life, you had no contact with white people?
No contact. My African teacher was sort of there, but yeah, my African teacher, and then my economics teacher was an Indian lady, but apart from that, we never had really any contact with other people.
So part of the problems that we're facing today is that we have lived segregated lives, which was the purpose of apartheid, that we've lived in parallel universes, and very often we just have no understanding at all. And that's part of our problem. Just a last question for both of you. I've been reading social media and newspaper articles. I read a statement that says whites are all racists. I read a statement that says blacks are all losers. You hear that often in different ways. How do we respond to that as Christians? Whites are all racists, blacks are all losers. How do we respond to that if you're a Christian? If you're part of this church family, how do you respond to that?
I think the only way we can respond is if we get to know each other and we break what was created, which was the segregation. So what I've realized and what's helped me over the years to be real in my relationship is to have real relationships across the racial and economic lines. So it's so easy just to stay together in one group, but it's so much fuller and life is richer when we are all together, and we know that because that's what the Bible tells us. And at the end in Revelation, in heaven, we're all going to be together, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So I think real relationships and consciously, those of us who were all affected by apartheid, but when you see yourself saying, oh, they're doing something wrong, you must stop and say, why is it wrong? Who's to say my way is the right way? So I think it's making a conscious, deliberate effort with your mind and your heart to fight that superiority or the opposite. But key is the relationships, I think.
David?
Yeah, and I think the gospel sort of breaks those barriers, because you understand that before Jesus, we all messed up people. And I think if we firstly understand that we're made in the image of God, equally and that we all sinners. I think that takes us a step forward in terms of understanding each other and understanding what Christ does for us, that we make those efforts to reconcile because of all that Christ has done for us. And I think we need to have a mind change. We need to firstly transform our minds and then have intentional efforts to try to sort out our issues. To have intentional effort as a white person to remember black names. That if my name is Kakambile, you must please go.
Don't call him Paul.
Yeah, please don't call me something else. To make that effort, because you transformed by the gospel, to remember the name. I think those are steps towards transformation. And as Kate said, I believe a sense of family and community will break barriers, that our brides need to look a bit more different. Our dinner tables need to look a bit more different. And I think that's a step towards transformation, that if I can welcome you into my house, I trust you with my kids, then I think we will be able to understand each other much, much better.
David and Kate, thank you so much for sharing with us and being transparent and exposing some of the issues that we all struggle with. Let's give them a big hand of thanks.